Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez on this Tuesday, January 19, 2021. Now in studio with us, we have Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. I miss anything? You guys been talking about anything interesting this last 48 hours? Slow news
well,
cycle?
Well, yesterday was all Chiefs. Today, we've had mostly Chiefs with some Kansas basketball sprinkled in. If you'd like to comment on that.
Baylor's pretty good. That's about the best I can say.
That's right.
I watched 20 minutes of that game, and I was like, well, I can go to sleep now.
Baylor's pretty good. Enough?
But Michigan's pretty good, too. They got clapped, to use a Chase Claypool terminology over the weekend, but I think they can hang with those teams, Baylor and Gonzaga.
Mm.
I feel good about my Wolverine. It was a tough weekend for the basketball team, but it was a good weekend for Michigan quarterbacks. Former
there
Michigan
you go.
Quarterbacks.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Henne coming through for the Kansas City Chiefs, of course. Now, you wrote about the Chiefs, and for anyone that didn't get a chance to read that, you wrote about the Chiefs and their heart that was on full display in the win over the Cleveland Browns. And so tell us a little bit about what you wrote and what your takeaways were from the Chiefs' victory over Cleveland.
Well, I think two takeaways, obviously. One is the Mahomes storyline, but the other is just that I think the Chiefs found themselves in a very difficult situation and really had to man up, and I try to tell people this when I talk on national platforms, that as much as Mahomes dominates the conversation, as much as the offense dominates the conversation, I mean, this has been a really good team, a team in the truest sense of the word, that a lot of guys stepping up and making plays when they need to be made, and I think you saw that on Sunday, where it wasn't an ideal situation. Granted, they had a pretty significant lead, a 12-point lead. Was it 12 points when they? What was it when they got hurt? Was it 19-3 or 22-10?
I'm trying to remember. It was.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was 19. They kicked one more field goal. Yeah.
So it was 19-10 or was it 19-3? I can't remember. But they had a nice cushion. But that game changed when Mahomes went out, and you could see it in their body language. You could see it in their frustrations and their emotions, and they were ripe for an upset at that point. And I think they found a way to make the plays they had to make. On defense, obviously Chad Henne made some plays there late in the game that allowed them to pull the win out. And so when you're going to guys you don't normally go to, or you're relying on players that you don't normally rely on to win games, that's a lot about who you are. And as much as the Daniel Sorensen, Rashard Higgins play has gotten attention because of the rule and because of the hit or the helmet-to-helmet contact, that you have to give Sorensen credit for hustling over and not giving up on the play and creating an opportunity for your team to get a key turnover, getting the ball back, because that play ends up being the difference in the ball game. If that's a touchdown, they're losing that game. And so I think you saw a lot of that in that game, which was impressive.
I was thinking about you while that game was unfolding with the Henne situation, because we've had a lot of conversations this year about what goes into a championship team. And you brought up a lot what happened last year with Matt Moore, how he had to come into the game a couple times, and they almost beat the Packers, at least they hung with them, and then they beat the Vikings. You said, that was a moment where this team got tested, and they grew from that. And I was wondering to myself, is this that moment that, you were almost kind of, it seemed like you were kind of suggesting through the course of this year that maybe they were missing that moment that caused them to really look within themselves and come up with an answer. Was that it?
I think so. I mean, I think there's nothing else that's comes close to that level of adversity for them over the course of the year. I mean, you can say they lost to the Raiders. That's probably the only game you could say that they actually were in an adverse situation. But it wasn't. They lost Sammy Watkins that day. They lost Kelechi Osemele. They haven't. Mitchell Schwartz went down the same day. So it's like, but when you lose Mahomes, that's when you're like, okay, what are we really made of here?
Mm-hmm.
Can we get through this? And if they don't have him next Sunday or this coming Sunday, that's, again, I wouldn't count them out. I think some people say, oh, there's no way they can beat Buffalo if he's not playing. They've won games without him. And and again, he dominates the conversation for all the obvious reasons, and he's a great player. But I think this team has gone through a lot. I think Andy Reid and his coaching staff have learned a lot, and I think that they've found ways to win in difficult situations. I don't think it'll be easy, but I certainly wouldn't say, oh, they have no chance of beating Buffalo if Mahomes can't be on the field.
No, just ask yourself this question. If any of the other teams were put in that situation in a close game where they lose their starting quarterback, would they have been as successful? Would Buffalo, Green Bay, or Tampa Bay with Blaine Gabbert been able to pull that off? Who knows?
Is Jordan Love?
Questions out there.
Green Bay's backup? Who's Green Bay's backup? It's not Jordan Love, is it?
I don't know.
He's not second.
I don't know.
I think he's the third string guy. I mean, it was his. Which, to your point, Stephen, yeah, I mean, it'd be hard. It'd be hard to do it. And, yeah, I don't
want right.
And look, I definitely feel in that game that.
According to the ESPN depth chart, Tim Boyle is the second string quarterback for the Packers.
Yeah, I don't think Tim Boyle
out of
would
Eastern
get it done.
Kentucky.
Yeah, Tim Boyle wouldn't have gotten it done for Green Bay if Rodgers went
down. Tim Boyle come in there, guns a blazing, baby.
Mm-hmm. He's no Taylor Heineke. But.
And by the way, it was 19-10 Mahomes.
Okay.
When Mahomes gets hurt, and then and again, we just gloss right over this, but when Mahomes got hurt, then it was 4th-and-1 at the KC 48, and there are many a coach that would have punted and say, hey, we got our backup in, we need to kind of take a step back and gather ourselves, we're just going to punt it here, because we've seen already in these playoffs Mike Vrabel, Mike Tomlin, coaches punting when they shouldn't have. But Andy Reid still had the faith and is went right. And that says a lot about his confidence in Henny and his confidence in the rest of the team. And he says, no, we're going to go for it. First play with Henny in, we go for it on 4th-and-1. Later on, they had a 4th-and-1 at the 15, didn't go for it, but they kicked an important field goal. But I thought that said something right away. When Mahomes goes out, it's 4th-and-1 at the KC 48, and Andy Reid says, no, we go for it here. I thought that was an important 4th-and-1 statement as well.
Yeah, it was. It was. I mean, that. I think at that point, I think Andy's got a lot of faith in this team, not just Chet Henne, but I think everybody that's around him. And so I don't think 4th downs have scared him for a long time. Now, flip side of that is you can have too much confidence, and that interception that Henne threw. It's probably an example of having too much faith in your team.
I don't know what that was.
It was a bad idea is what it was. Look,
well, if you can't, don't throw that. I mean, I know whatever the play call was, if you're Henny, you see that, you check down. You know, I mean, you don't throw that.
I don't think he saw it. I think that's probably
not like there was nothing there but Cleveland Browns, really.
That's right.
One chief. I mean, like, I don't, you know. Like, if there's ever a time to, like, bail out, you know, no, I'm not going to throw
maybe
it.
Maybe I can bounce it off this guy's helmet, different guy's shoulder pads, going to land in Tyreek Hill's hands. Look, it's, you know, I think that faith, it's a fine line you have to walk. And I have a lot of respect for Andy Reid and his coaches and what they've done. So I understand that confidence. But, you know, before we came on, Nate and I were talking about just the call that got Mahomes hurt. And I'm sure Andy Reid would like to have that one back. I'm never a big fan of that play unless you're running it with Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson, and for a quarterback with a bad toe to be running it in that situation, you're asking at some point for somebody to take a big shot at your quarterback. And I think they've been able to get away with that for a long period of time. And I've heard all the quotes where it's not coming out of the playbook, this and that. I guarantee you they get into that situation again. Le'Veon Bell or Darrell Williams or Anthony Sherman, I don't care who's Daniel Kilgore, someone else is running the football in that short yard situation. I doubt we'll be seeing that option play as often as we saw it in the past.
So one of the things we heard Andy Reid talk about yesterday was kind of describing the moments of being on the sideline during that 3rd-and-14 when Henny ran for it, and then the 4th-and-1 when they decided to make this play to go for it. First things first, for you, scale of gutsiness, I don't know, 1 to 10 or whatever. We're all calling this a gutsy or ballsy call. How when you're watching it live, how gutsy was that call to go for it on 4th-and-1 with Chad Henne there and your whole season on the line?
It was gutsy, but you know, we've watched a lot of Chiefs games. I mean, how often have they not gone for it in that situation? You know, it just seemed like.
But this was Chad Henne, who had just thrown a pick in the last drive.
Yeah, but it's also fourth and it was fourth and inches. It wasn't even just fourth and one. It was like all you need is an inch, and so like we can probably talk all day long about why they can't run the ball in those situations. But if you're going to run a play for your best player, you got the matchup you wanted to have. I'm sure that. I'm trying to remember if they had a timeout left or not.
Yes.
Yep.
They had a timeout. So I think they're probably looking at what they had defensively. People are talking about he's trying to, you know, lure him off sides. He's not going to call it. I think they were trying to make sure, okay, we got the right matchups we want to have.
Yeah.
We got the right look. And so let's get into it. And if you, I think if they hadn't gotten the right look, they would have gotten out of it and run something else. But I think that it was, I think it was consistent with who they are.
So, yeah.
They found out it was man coverage and it was on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why they put Williams in motion, right, to see that. But one of the things that Andy Reid talked about, I wanted to ask you about the dynamics of the – I thought it was an interesting way. He doesn't usually give you a lot, but he said, hey, the last minute of that situation, the headset was not quiet. He said a lot of times the headsets can go quiet at that time because everybody's nervous that they don't want to say the wrong thing to the head coach or suggest the wrong thing. But he said everybody was, hey, look, you might have to have a fourth and one play ready to go after this third down play and all that. And then he said, you know, he asked Kafka, hey, and Kafka said, look, we talked about a fourth down play. We like it. He said he went to Eric Bieniemy, said, you good? And Bieniemy said, yes. I'm curious, with your experience covering a lot of NFL teams, a lot of coaching staffs, is the line of communication always that open to a legendary coach like that? Are most legendary coaches surrounded by guys that are willing to speak up and put it on the line there in those situations? Or is that a rarity as your experience?
There's a lot of dialogue back and forth. I mean, throughout the course of a game, I'm sure there's a lot of people who have... Look, when they're sitting in game plans, it's not just Andy Reid out there with a... You know, in the chalkboard, doing like looking like Matt Damon and Good Will Hunting, like all these different equations and everything, and just walking out like a beautiful mind. It's like they have a lot of back and forth. So these guys have a lot of conversations about what they're going to do in different situations on the night before games, in the practices leading up to games. So yeah, I don't think at that point any coach wants to not listen to people who've been in the conversation. You know, throughout the course of the week, I think it's pretty common, and I think a smart coach would listen to that. And in fact, you've seen coaches who are willing to say, "Hey, you make the call. I trust you." You know, a head coach, like you look at that Jets game a few weeks ago with they got beat on the Raiders beat them on that last second play. That was Adam Gase saying, "All right, you go ahead and make the call, Greg. All right, now you're getting fired." So that happens too. But yeah, I think Andy has been very open, and you've always heard him comment about, you know, the, you know, not just the enemies, but Kafka and Blamire. I think this guy's name, Joel Blamire. He's always kind of talking, the guy who does a lot of research on the plays. And
he's the one that got on the headset and told them when it was 3rd and 14, hey, you might have to have a fourth down play ready to go here.
Yeah, but you know, at that 3rd and 14 play was... That was a lot of Chad Henne making it happen. But it's also the Cleveland Browns rushing poorly and playing poor defense in a really critical situation. You know that
that defense on that play, they played like they had some Henne.
Yeah, that's right. I think Willie McGinnis told me once that Bill Parcells told him the worst place for a pass rusher to be is behind the quarterback, and you saw two guys behind him, and then you see. You know, again, another play that goes unnoticed in that situation is when Henne starts taking off to run. Because I was watching the film, I was kind of like, where are the Browns? Where's the second level of defense at? Because he ran a long way before you saw anybody else. And they ran a pretty deep concept. A lot of guys were running deep, trying to create an opportunity for a completion there. But once he took off running, if you look at the film, the cornerback who was covering Hill on the last play was in position. They were playing zone, was in position to come up and tackle Henne much earlier than when they actually got to him. And you see DeMarcus Robinson come back, and you know they're trying to plaster him. But at some point, Robinson kind of gets in front of him enough to kind of hold him back. And that, whatever, that 1 or 2 seconds of just jostling gave Henne enough time to get another 5 or 6 yards. I don't think they're going for it if it's 4th and 5 fourth and six. But at 4th and 1, it's a whole different conversation. Even 4th and 3, 4th and 4 is probably a little bit different because that play they ran is not going to get you as good as Tyreek Hill, is probably not going to get you 4 or 5 yards in that situation. So you to have it 4th and 1, playbook's a lot more open than it is at 4th and 5.
All right, we have Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. I want to go back to Mahomes and what you were talking about and the play call and everything else, because I thought this was some interesting stuff yesterday from Andy Reid. And you hear Saran Petro with a follow-up here as well. Andy was asked, and we talked about this yesterday. I've heard the program talk about this in the zone. You know, he got hurt. Mahomes did, remember, with the quarterback sneak. Now the quarterback sneak's out of the playbook.
Yeah.
But they're still willing to utilize him as a wide receiver running downfield. Yeah. and the speed option and everything else. And so it's clear it's superstition. That doesn't make any sense that you would do all these other things. And look, Patrick Mahomes plays a style of football where he's going to take some hits. His legs and his improvisation, that's what makes him so fantastic. So you can't take away all these things from him, because that's what makes him the great quarterback that he is. But so now, I guess, like, are they going to take the speed option out now because he got hurt there? And all I'm saying is 4th and inches, 4th and 1, I'm okay with a quarterback sneak in the playoffs, because it seems to work for everyone else, and they shouldn't turn away from it just because he got hurt on a freak deal. And we've seen he can get hurt in other ways. That doesn't mean you should remove the play from the playbook, but I think the playoffs, everything's on the table. Let's listen to what Andy Reid had to say. He was asked about why they've run Mahomes outside but haven't sneaked since Mahomes got hurt in Denver.
So, you know, Serena, get you a little bit more out in space, the ones that we use here, as opposed to going up the middle and, you know, just stating the obvious, but yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then secondarily, I know the protocols take over and all the doctors do all that. Is there a, you know, if he were cleared on a Sunday morning, having no practices, would he be able to play? Or is there a certain point during the week where you, maybe not publicly, but you in your head say, okay, he's missed too much and he's out and we're going with Chad?
Well, I'd hate to say it publicly.
Well, I know, and I know you wouldn't.
but listen, I'll have to evaluate that as we go forward. You know, let's just see how this whole thing rolls.
Let's go next to Sam Mellinger. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Andy. Last night after the game, you used the term intestinal fortitude, right, to describe what you were really proud of in the way that game ended. You guys have the whole season has been close wins like that, right? I'm just wondering, in your experience, how rare or common is it to have a team that has this level of whatever that is, intestinal fortitude?
I'm glad you didn't have me define intestinal fortitude. I was worried that you were going there. So yeah, I think it's unique. It's a unique characteristic to have. And, this crew's done that. They have trust in each other, to get that done. Now, rather have it not have to be that way and bigger leads, but the bottom line is, you know, you attempt to win the football game and do it the best way you can against great competition in this league. So at times you're going to have to reach down and just reach a little deeper and really, you know, whatever that term is, to get in there and use that intestinal fortitude, so to get you over the hump. So, and most of it ends up being trusting guys around you and then strain to make the play a little bit better. And that's what our guys have done to this point.
Hey, Jeff, going back to the first part of that clip, you think Andy likes answering questions about how he runs Patrick Mahomes? did it seem like he was enjoying that or not?
I think he probably wasn't enjoying it. And
No.
You know, it's – and part of me wonders after the first 24 hours after that game passed, if he was just like, maybe I should just not – I should be more conservative in what I say. Because I felt like after the game, you know, he was – Patrick's doing great. He's passed everything. And it's sort of like he's in the protocol. So it's – and I know that he's not trying to convey or mislead in that situation, but I think it's just like at this point it's like he's in the protocol. You got to – play it out and see what happens. And then he made the comment yesterday where he said, you know, back in the day, a guy gets hit like that and gets up. You saw him run into the tunnel like he'd been back out in the game. And it's like NFL is probably cringing somewhere. That's why we are. That's why we have a protocol now, because you don't want them going back in the game after seeing that scene, no matter how. And I've heard all the different theories about how it happened and the neck and the choking out and everything else. And it's just like, you don't have to have a concussion to be in protocol. You know, you have to have these symptoms. And once a doctor looks at you, and anybody who watched him in that situation, for him to go back and play in a game like that would have been criminal. It's like, and it goes beyond just run it back or AFC title games coming up. It's about somebody's health. And sometimes you have to save guys from themselves. A lot of times in this game, you have to save guys from themselves. And it's just too many. You don't want to get so caught up and become so myopic in how we look at this that we forget that there are people who've killed themselves because they've had CTE. There's people who can't wake up and remember their kids' names or how to get to the grocery store or can't look at bright light. And it's just, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic here, but all this stuff is in place. So we start having more perspective on how to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I thought when Patrick Mahomes tried to get up and couldn't get up was like, somebody needs to take care of him. Somebody needs to make sure he's okay. Not, hey, how are they going to beat the Browns without him playing?
Hey, I think it needs to be said, though, and I don't know that Andy Reid was trying to say that
he wasn't. Yeah.
He wasn't saying, like, hey, the good old days. Yeah. I think he was just saying that, like, that's where we've come. And I think it is a credit to the NFL, because a lot of times I think we look at it with a cynical eye and say, well, they're just doing all this concussion protocol stuff to cover their butts and to give the appearance that they care about player safety. But, man, it is true that I think for the vast majority of my life, that man would have been back on the field playing football.
Yeah.
And I think that in a game that big, with the stakes that high, there's a lot of people that wish he was out there playing. And I think it's a credit to the NFL that he wasn't. He never came back out of the locker room. And he's going to have to pass the test this week to get back on the field. And I think that does signify that we've come a long, long way, because there are a lot of people to this day who would sit there and say, hey, man, this is the AFC Championship game. Come on, you can get out there and play.
And I've heard people say, well, he didn't have a concussion. Like you said, it was a neck thing. Well, if it was a neck thing, they talk about neck, they talk about spine, they talk about brain. This is all part of the same process. And I agree with you. I'm not saying Andy was trying to say, hey, I wish we could go back to 1997 and throw him out there and see what happened. I totally believe he cares about his players. I think when he was – you saw him on the stand, on the press conference stand after the game. I think a lot of – you could tell he was a little bit shook by what had happened. And I don't think he was shook because, hey, I might not have Patrick for the AFC title game. He was shook because Patrick got hurt, and he was worried about him. But, yeah, there is an element of that. You know, somebody the other day said, well, there's a lot of money riding on this game, a lot of revenue. If he's not playing, you know, it's so what? It's like he's got to go through the protocol. And I know that there's been reports of, you know, the Chiefs are hopeful that he can play. Part of me thinks he will play. But you just don't know what's going to happen as he goes through the protocol process. He doesn't even know what's going to happen, because they establish a baseline for you before the year ever starts. That baseline is what they stick to as you're going through all these symptoms. You can't cheat it. It's not like having a sprained ankle or a pulled hamstring. You can't gut it out. You got to go in there and go through all this stuff.
Yeah, you can't will your way through it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody's going to look at you and give you some basic stuff, and they're going to look at the baseline and say, here's where you are. And if you take a step back, you go all the way back to the whole start of the process. And so it's just, I think most people probably have a good perspective on this, but I think there also is a lot of people who don't understand how it works.
And also, it'll, you know, the bottom line is it'll come down to the evaluation of an independent neurologist after he's pass through all these different stages, and that will be the final answer. We will take a break now. We have Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com in studio. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I do think they have the formula to beat the Chiefs, man. Josh Allen is one of those guys who's in the MVP conversation. He doesn't just do it with his arm. He does it with his legs as well. The only thing that scares me is, like you said, they did not run that football any last week against the Baltimore Ravens. And if you want to go right arm for right arm, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes is the guy that you want to try to test that right arm with. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Josh Allen's right arm is pretty doggone good too. So I think that they'll be able to put up some points. I think they'll be able to keep this game close. And in the fourth quarter, we're going to see who runs away with it.
That was former Packers wide receiver James Jones on ESPN talking about the matchup between the Chiefs and the Bills. All right, Jeff, let's get into the championship games, championship weekend. And let's see how much this statement irritates you. I believe in 15 years, we will look back at this weekend and say that the three greatest quarterbacks of all time were all in action on this championship weekend. And Josh Allen. And who knows what Josh Allen will be.
Yeah.
But I think when it's all said and done, years from now, we will look back and the three greatest quarterbacks of all time will be recognized as Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes.
Hmm.
I don't know what order, though. Yeah. Is that nuts to say that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that you've got a lot of reason to believe that. I'll start with Brady, and obviously I've known Tom for a long time. He went to Michigan, so I have a long history with him. If he goes to the Super Bowl and wins it with the Bucs, he will always be the greatest quarterback.
Do you think Bill Belichick will love it?
It's mind blowing.
How could anybody think that?
And I thought they would make a run just because I thought they were trending in the right direction after the Chiefs beat them. They kind of figured things out. But my God, it's like this. He went to a whole new team, a team
look
that
had
not been
numbers.
In the playoffs. Look at his numbers. But a team had not been in the playoffs for like 17 years.
Mm-hmm. A team. What were they? They were 7-9 last year. And so he gives them a +4 in the win column, and they're in their championship game. And again, Jeff, the numbers are insane. Yeah. Nobody, even the biggest optimist, did not predict the numbers he was going to put up.
40 touchdown passes. Yeah.
But the point is, in this offseason, when you don't get a chance to work with your new team as much and work with the new offense as much, and no OTAs and no traditional training camp, that's even more surprising because everybody said, boy, you know who's really going to suffer this year because of this, or quarterbacks going to new teams because this is not going to have time to gel. That makes it even more impressive, right?
It is. It is. And he's the only quarterback left standing. Well, I think in the divisional round, he was the only quarterback who had not been on his team the previous year, right?
Of course, he pushed the envelope with those rules. Remember that in the offseason, too? He was out there gathering with his team against rules and all that. But
fighting with park rangers to stay on the field. I'm just out here just taking a little walk.
He's playing his butt off, though. Like, when you watch him play, he's making throws. He does – I feel like if you watch him right now and somebody told you, like, he's 44 years old or whatever he is, you wouldn't really believe it the way he's playing.
Well, look at him and Drew Brees. Just the difference. And
yeah,
Drew Brees is 18 months younger, and he is out there playing like a 35-year-old man. And you know, as Steve mentioned, he just changed an entire culture in what, 6 months of a team, and it almost feels like I saw Bruce Arians say something about he's just an amazing leader, and I just sit back and marvel, and I just let him be him. I'm not trying to micromanage this guy. And it's like their offense that they were running when the Chiefs played them looks totally different now. They bring in Antonio Brown, who was a train wreck. And I don't know if he's going to be able to play or not this week, but he's had like 500 receiving yards since he showed up, become a huge part of that offense, and had not had one single issue off the field.
Hey, let's not forget that, like, Bill Belichick in many ways seemed to drive one of the greatest tight ends, not the greatest, but one of the greatest tight ends away from the game. And Tom Brady brought him back. Like, you know, like when you talk about a guy that
his health drove him out of the game too, though, man. I mean, his health.
But he spoke about how he was lacking the fun. It just didn't seem like it was fun. You know, Gronk is a fun guy. But I mean, my point is, like, Antonio Brown. How many different teams decided we would rather eat a ton of money than have this guy on our team? But he goes and plays for Tom Brady. And my point is about the leadership. Yeah. The different types of personalities, they gravitate towards him. They respond to him. It's amazing. To go to your point, Stephen, Jake and I had a great conversation during the commercial break after you initially brought this point up.
About, oh, good. Save him for the commercial break. That's great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, we've been wanting to get back to it because it is so hard. I believe it's getting harder and harder to compare quarterbacks from generation to generation because of how quickly the game is changing. And we talk about like this situation with Patrick Mahomes. What would Joe Montana be in today's NFL? I don't know, but I do know that that dude got concussed a bunch by the defensive fronts of the New York Giants and teams like that in a way that Tom Brady doesn't have to deal with in today's NFL. And there's still injuries that come up and all that, but like, how do you compare John Elway and Joe Montana? Because statistically, you just can't do it because they played in such a completely different time than what these guys are doing now. And I don't know the answer to that.
Well, they're all great. I mean, you can pick and choose what you think is important in a quarterback and how you want to, you know, prioritize somebody's greatness. But I think Steven's right. I think what Aaron Rodgers has done in his career, how Patrick has started his career, like both those guys, when it's all said and done, are going to be in everybody's top five. But for me, what sets a quarterback aside is winning championships and putting up numbers and leading. And so I think Tom Brady's off the charts in all three of those yeah. categories. He is the best leader I've ever seen in football. By far. I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah. I don't see how it's hard to argue that. The Aaron Rodgers one's an interesting one because he's only made one Super Bowl and only won one Super Bowl. Back when
1-3 in championship games.
When the early days of Rodgers, when he started doing that, I got all carried away and I said he's the best quarterback I've ever seen. And I still do think he's the most like physically gifted, at least until Patrick Mahomes came around, in terms of his arm strength and accuracy and all those things. But how do you process where he is as a leader, and has he changed that dynamic by having a new coach this year and excelling the way that he has with the coaching change?
I think he's proven a lot this year. And there was a lot of talk in the offseason when the draft came and went about he needs more weapons, he needs more of this and that. And he just showed you that, like, I'm Aaron Rodgers. Damn it. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, you know, all these guys, like Mahomes has got Tyreek Hill and Travis and Sammy Watkins, and you know, they gave Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen. Like, I've got Devontae Adams, but I'm throwing the guys like Robert Tonyan and Equanimeous St. John, and they had a guy named Geronimo Allison. It's like, that's not a receiving core. That's like the reboot of the Village People. You know?
I feel like he hates that what was it, Scantling? What the hell's his name?
Marquez Valdez Scantling. Yeah,
he leads the league in hyphenated names. Because like every game I watch of the Packers, he drops what should be a wide open touchdown.
Yeah, he's and, like wide open by like 5-6 yards.
And he just, and Rodgers just stares at him, looks down, like, you know, like every freaking time this happens, and then he goes and talks to him later on to make a good catch. But did you see that tweet from Emmanuel Acho? It's a couple days ago. I'll retweet it now so you look at it. It said, if you played in the NFL, you've personally been scarred by this Aaron Rodgers smirk. And it's him, and he's lining up under center against the Rams, and you could tell, you could just see it. He sees the defense, and he knows what's about to happen, and this was right before a big play, and he gets this smirk on his face. Mm-hmm. And it reminds you of stories like you hear about before that game-winning Super Bowl drive, Joe Montana's in the huddle, everyone's nervous, and he points out John Candy in the crowd. And mm-hmm. then, you know, hey, we're getting ready to win the championship, and he's pointing out celebrities. Patrick Mahomes mic'd up in the Super Bowl, and the sheer joy and the fun he's having playing football. Get the hell knocked out of him and goes, that's a good hit, you know, and just having fun. And you see this, I think it seems like there's a common thread. The great competitors, these great guys are having so much fun out there at a different level. When you're all, you know, wound up and tight and defense and not knowing what's going to happen, he sees everything. And if you look at just at SSJWHB, the smirk, like, I got your ass now. And then all these other NFL players were retweeting, yep, I remember that. I hated that look because we knew that something was wrong, or he, and you couldn't do anything. It's helpless, right?
Yeah.
You
know what well,
I
mean? It's.
I love that. I love that look.
Yeah. Well, and it reminds me of something that Steve Young told me a long time ago when I was covering the 49ers and living in the Bay Area, and he said the thing about this game, he was on his way out. He'd got concussed. He was like 37 years old, and he was still playing at a high level. He got, they were playing the Arizona Cardinals. Aeneas Williams came off a corner blitz, like hit him blindsided, like laid him out. He was out for like 10 minutes. He was gone, and he never played again. But he was trying to play really hard, and eventually he ended up retiring after that season. But I remember talking to him, and he said, man, Jeff, it's like the thing about what drives me to keep playing at this point in my career, even though people say I should just hang it up, is that you spend so much time trying to learn how to play quarterback in this league. And you get to a certain point, a certain age, certain level of experience, and you've seen everything, you know everything, and the game just slows down for you so much. And the real challenge at that point is, can your body keep up? And it's almost like a drug for some of these guys, and why they want to keep playing so long, because it's not hard anymore. When Aaron Rodgers is out there, you're not showing him anything he hasn't seen. And no matter who he's out there, I joke about the receivers he's playing with, but he knows how to create opportunities to score whenever he wants to. And the only thing that's going to slow him down, or a Tom Brady or a Patrick Mahomes when he gets to that point in his career, is just, can they do it physically? You know, have the injuries caught up with him? And you saw that with Drew Brees. You saw that with Drew Brees on Sunday against the Buccaneers, where it was like he knew, everybody watching him knew, you can't play this game physically at the level that you need to play. You can still see a lot of stuff, and you can still win a lot of games doing that, but to be able to be who you are and what you've been, that is a moment when every quarterback's got to be able to say, all right, I can't do it physically anymore, and it's time for me to go.
That's the thing that's so incredible about Patrick Mahomes, is it seems like he reached that point of the game slowing down for him, like this, you know, his rookie year. I mean, it's or else there's another level that he can still get to that we haven't even seen yet, which seems impossible.
Well, I think he's helped by the physical ability. I mean, he's physically the most gifted quarterback I've ever seen in terms of just all the things he can do and the movement. But he admitted that, what I think in the offseason, he didn't really know what he was looking at defensively until, towards the end of last year. And so I think he's got a ways to go. He's not where Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady are in terms of being able to see stuff. I mean, it's still going to take some time, because he's going to – and really the challenge for him as he gets older is going – and we've said this before. It's like they're not going to be able to always have a Travis Kelce-type player, a Tyreek Hill-type player around him. And can he – and I think he will – can he play at that level with guys who are no-name dudes, guys who are fifth, sixth-round – you know, obviously Hill was a fifth-round pick, but it's a different kind of fifth-round pick, you know. the Robert Tonyans of the world, the Marquez Valdez Scantlings of the world. Can you elevate those kind of dudes? What Brady was doing in New England. I mean, think about what Brady did in New England with what they had last year and what they did without him this year. Pretty much the same supporting cast, and not even a playoff team. They won 12 games with him last year.
We have Jeff Jadea in studio, and when you were describing Drew Brees, I was thinking that, you know, that described Joe Montana when he got to Kansas City. He could still see everything, and there were flashes, but physically, he just couldn't just couldn't hold up. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, Jeff Jadea, we got 5 minutes. Give us your predictions. Tell us how each of these games are going to go down. First NFC and then AFC, and let's assume that Patrick Mahomes is going to play, because positive thinking is a very powerful tool, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, man, the NFC side is way tougher for me, just because I think both these teams are playing really well. I love both the quarterbacks. I'll give Green Bay the edge, just because it's in Green Bay. It's going to be cold. I think Aaron Rodgers is the MVP for a reason. Their defense is playing at a much higher level. They just beat up on the best defense in football and the Rams. And it's just, they feel pretty magical right now. So I'll take Green Bay 28-27.
Ooh, wow. Ooh, one-point game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a five-point game. And then
missed extra point, the difference? Is that what we're doing? Wouldn't that be something?
Is Bucker kicking for them? Harrison Bucker out there?
Hey, oh, hey, hey, easy there. That's a fresh wound. No salt in the wound, please.
Right. And I'll take the Chiefs. If Mahomes plays, I'll take the Chiefs. If he doesn't, I'll take the Bills. But I think he'll play. I suspect what they went through last week will be give them an impetus that will be really critical to their success. you know, the Bills, Nate and I were talking about this. The Bills played a better defense, but I think something – it concerned me that they didn't run the ball that much in that game. And if they want to come in here and just throw the football all over the place, I don't think that's going to be a great recipe for them. They're going to have to be more balanced. And, I think Chiefs win. I think that we're going to see in a season when the Chiefs have had done a number of things and set a record for wins, I think they're going to face their two toughest tests in the next two games they play. The Bills are very good, and they're playing really good football. But I'll take the Chiefs. Again, I think it'll be in the 20s. I'll take the Chiefs 27-24.
That's a cover. That is a cover, baby. What's it at now, Jake? Is it still 2.5?
What's the over? It went up.
What's the over under?
Oh,
it was at 3 when I saw it. The over under is me. It
53.
Is 54 on my list. I got -3 wow. for the Chiefs, -3 points, and then 54 is the total.
So I'm at 51, huh? That sounds about right. I don't think it gets into the 30s.
But my guy might be trying to screw me too.
I have Green Bay.
I'll just steal a half point from this guy.
Green Bay is favored by 3.5. The over-under on that one's 50.5.
Man, I feel like with those two teams.
I want that over, man.
Is that weather-based? 50.5,
I like that.
You think it'd be in the 30s with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, with Brady and we just talked about the ridiculous numbers that Brady and Rodgers are both putting up this year.
Well, you said 28-27. That's the over. It's only 50. It's 50.5.
Well, and I feel like there's just going to be a lot more running in this game. I think both these teams have become a lot more aware of, you know, the Bucs using Fournette more. The last couple of weeks has been big for me. But I just think, man, that kid A.J. Dillon, adding that to Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones. I mean, the Matt LaFleur, I wasn't a huge fan when he got that job, but the last 2 years he's put together there have been pretty impressive. And
yeah,
look, I know we haven't talked about Eric Bieniemy real quick. It pains me to think he's going to go another year without a job.
It's just outrageous. It's beyond outrageous if it happens.
Pulling guys like Dan Campbell out of the hat.
Mm-hmm. Here's a job. Dan Campbell punched Nate Bukati in the mouth. The title boxing almost knocked him out.
The different as Danny Campbell.
Danny Campbell. Caught
me with the left hook, knocked me clear for a week. Hey,
same difference as far as the Lions are concerned.
I've heard of Danny Campbell, so I didn't know.
Going to have the same also, result, Danny or Dan.
Can we give one final shout out to, was it Christian? Was that his name last night, the walk-on for KU?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I'm getting all my T-hens mixed up. But he hit the three-pointer to make it right. To make a 69.
Christian comes in the game, Jeff, walk-on. And Kansas is down 11. He hits a three. Was it a half-court three at the buzzer?
Pretty close.
And that makes it an eight-point game. What was the spread? 8.5.
8.5.
A great moment in gambling history. What a thrilling – well, can you imagine if you'd have got backdoored on that one, Jake?
Oh. No.
Oof.
Thank goodness.
But if you had Kansas 8.5, that was a hell of a shot, the celebration. That's a game winner. Jeff Judea, thank you so much for the time. Right. I want to talk to you next week about the Chiefs of the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Can we do that, please?
Okay. Right. I hope you get that opportunity.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's Jeff Judea. This has been the Border Patrol. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.